Hello, everyone, and welcome to our Fundraising Masters for March. Today, our topic is the only thing you need to know about fundraising, which is quite an enticing title, and I'm delighted to have Jeff Brooks here with me to talk about this, talk about fundraising. I'll be introducing him in a minute. I am Brian Saber. I'm the president of ASCII Matters. I am a lifelong fundraiser, asker, worked in organizations for a long time. And as many of you know, because you follow me and ASCII Matters now, I spent the last 10 years digging in deep on this question of asking, in particular face-to-face asking, which of course is all focused on relationship. And Jeff is really big on relationship and it being all about the donors. And so that focus that he does a lot of direct mail and website work and email work and all sorts of work all over the world, which we'll talk about. And it all comes down to relationships. So I'm delighted to have him here today to underscore that. Some quick housekeeping. For those of you who are new to the GoToWebinar system, we hope you're seeing a slide on the left and a control panel on the right. If not, click on that orange and white arrow to expand the box. Two things you want to watch out for there. One is audio. Sometimes most of us listen on our computers today, and sometimes that can get wonky. If it does, click on phone call and you'll get a telephone number to call in on. And the second is the questions box. Jeff is going to ask some questions along the way, and we want you to ask questions along the way. We will be very happy to take those questions during and at the end of the webinar, and Jeff's left a chunk of time for that. Also, you will get a link to the recording tomorrow, along with a PDF of Jeff's slide. So you'll have all that as well. And with that, I want to introduce Jeff. So Jeff has been in this business as long as I have. He has clients all over the world. He is, as he calls himself, a fundraising-ologist. He made up that term. I love that term. On his website, he talks about knowing every grammar rule, which I might want to test him on one day. I love grammar, though I don't get it correct 100% of the time. But he started with writing and is a master at that, meaning he's a master at the story and, you know, telling stories through words, which is what donations are all about. We had Jeff on last 6 years ago, which is way too long. He did an amazing webinar then. And Jeff, I'm delighted to have you back today to share all your expertise with the audience. So thank you for being here.
Thanks. It's great to be here. And, you know, I want to say I'm not a face-to-face fundraising guy, but I've had to do it. I'm on a couple of boards. So it's terrifying. It's like everything. Yeah, like everything I know, and it's like you're on a tightrope and there's no net. Anyway, yes. My hat's off to you for being able to do that.
And I'm not doing it because it's easy either, and most of us are. And so we're in the same boat as you board members are, and it's really a tough field, but an important one. So thanks for doing that as a board member. All of us staff members listening in today really appreciate that. Okay, so I'm now going to give you the screen, Jeff, and then you can continue from here. And everyone, I will watch the questions box. By the way, to make sure you know where that questions box is, can you type in where you are listening in from today? I am speaking to you today from South Orange, New Jersey, where I live and work. Jeff, you are?
Are you home? I'm at home in Seattle, Washington.
Seattle. Okay. Well, we've got people clear across the country, Ohio, Kentucky, California, Nevada, New York, Virginia, Massachusetts, Reno, South Dakota, Pennsylvania, all across the country. I'm seeing people in Canada as well. Lots of Chicagoans, one of my hometowns. Welcome, everyone. Jeff, take it from here.
All right. Thank you, Brian. Well, the title of our talk today is The Only Thing You Know About Fundraising. And I'm not going to come right out and claim that I'm showing you here the document where I discovered this truth, but it's really old material. The truth that fundraising is about, that what fundraising is about, this one single thing, is about as old as this document we're looking at. So I bet you want to know what it is, because once you know this one thing, you are going to be a very, very, very much better fundraiser. So here you go. Here's the truth. Excuse me, it's not showing up right. There you go. I'm having struggle with things. Here it is. Fundraising is about your donors, not about you. Okay. Okay. It's been nice talking to you. Okay. Once you know this, it makes all the difference in the world. You can, it's like you've become free to stop mucking around with a bunch of noise that just, that makes no difference to donors. And that's what, that's my description of most fundraising that's going on out there. There's too many of us think, and I thought until not so long ago, until embarrassingly not so long ago, I thought that if we could just show them how awesome the organization I'm working for is, then the money would just pour in. And if you're working that way, you are probably as frustrated as I was. I had this dark night of the soul at one point where I had written something and the results came back. I thought it was the most brilliant thing I'd ever written. And it bombed. It was awful. Didn't work. And I thought, I can't do this. I'm bad at this. I don't get it. I'm going to have to find some other different way to make a living. And I wanted to do this because I wanted to make the world a better place. Well, that was about when the truth broke through to me that's saying, you know what? You're talking about the wrong stuff. You're not talking about the donors. You're talking about yourself. And that's what I want you to know today. This is what a lot of, this is me years ago. That's not literally a picture of me. This is many, many, many fundraisers, including myself, saying if they really understood our programs, they'd give. And guess what? That is the number one cause of fundraising failure. Most likely, if you're struggling, it's because this is the basis of your fundraising. I work with a lot of different organizations. A lot of people come to me and say, hey, what can I do to do better? And almost every time, what I see is they're just going on and on and on about themselves, and they're not talking to the donor about the donor, because donors want to make the world a better place. They don't really care about how awesome you are. So let me show you an example. This is some real fundraising copy I got in the mail recently. I've changed the name of the organization. Basically, every time I do this, I change it to Springfield something or other, because there's a Springfield in almost every state in America. For nearly 40 years, Springfield Fights Poverty has been a pioneer in efforts to translate bold ideas into breakthrough solutions with a focus on the health of women and children. For example, this summer we worked with national and international partners to deliver a new form of injectable contraceptive, which we helped develop. It has the potential to save the lives of thousands of women every single year. Okay. Nice, right? My head is off to these people that they've done some cool thing and that they're implementing this solution. That's, you know, if they're telling the truth, and I have no reason to believe they are not, it's going to save lives. It's a good thing. But you know what they're doing? This isn't fundraising. This is bragging, and bragging is not fundraising. Okay. This is really the thing you would need to carry away from this talk today. Stop bragging. I know it seems right. And by the way, I hope you're doing brag-worthy stuff, because you need to be good. The world has a lot of problems, that the world needs to be so much better than it is, and it can be. So I hope you've got the best programs, that they are just awesome. But that's not how you're going to get people to give, is you're not going to get them to give by saying, look how awesome we are. So I took the liberty of rewriting that thing, that little brag fest we just looked at. Your gift today can save the life of a young mother by providing a simple new contraceptive that will help her take control of her life so she can take better care of her family and herself. This is how you turn it around and make it about the donor. You put the action in the donor's hands. Now, you're probably going to notice a couple of things about what I did here. Now, I'm not going to claim this is great fundraising writing here. But here's what you need to always do, is like, take those brags that you're so tempted to put out there and say, okay, yeah, that's all fine. That's great. I'm glad we have this program. But what does it mean to the donor? And one of the things you'll find is when you turn it around, make it about the donor, you end up explaining less and telling more. You talk about, well, what's the end product? And here's sort of the principle that I want you to take away from this. Donors don't give because you are awesome. They give because they are awesome. And when you know that, you can have the right conversation with them. Instead of, here's the awkward conversation we usually have. Fundraisers saying, see how awesome our programs are. And donors saying, hey, can you help me be awesome? Think about this. And you know this, actually, because you're a donor yourself. And take off your I work in and with an organization hat and just try to be that pure donor where you're not thinking about the organization. The reason you give to anything is you're thinking, how can I make the world a better place in the ways I care about? How can I put my values to work? That's the question you're asking. And you are looking for organizations that do that for you. So in other words, as a donor, the organizations you donate to are your tool. And you assemble basically a toolbox of your tools. You find organizations that do the things you want done in the world. That might be just one. It might be a whole box of them. But either way, that's what you're doing. And that's what donors are doing. They're not saying, what are the organizations I should give to? They may be saying that secondarily. Their primary question is, what are the things I can do to make the world a better place for my reasons, not theirs? So the fundraisers who win are the ones who answer that question for donors. So I'm going to give you, in fact, throughout this time together, I'm going to give you a series of fundraising hacks. Easy little things that you can do that will help you get into the right kind of fundraising. And I'm really going for basic, elementary, easy to do things. So here's my first hack for you. And it's this, it's count pronouns. You might have heard others talk about this, but here's what I always do. Either when I'm writing for myself or when I'm looking at somebody else's writing, I do this exercise, I count pronouns. And these are the ones I'm interested in. I look for I. All forms of I, me, my, mine, and including the plural of I, which is we and us. So I go through the whole thing. And actually what I'm going to show you here, this is just the first page of a longish letter. So we're not going to go through the entire thing, but you'll see what's going on here. All the forms of I that are on this page of this letter. And I go for all the forms of you, yours, you know, all those different ones. And I just start counting, and I will usually get two different colors of pen and mark them. And there we go. There's in green circled, there's two I's on this first page of this letter. Now let's go look for the U's. Look at that, there's seven of those. That's about how you want it to be. And when you do this, it's really easy kind of thing. You can now fix this letter. If it were lopsided, if it said I seven times and you twice, you would know. I'm not talking to the donor. I'm bragging about myself. I'm focusing this whole thing wrong. Okay. And you are suddenly going, you're going to have a guide for what do I need to change about this. Now, I don't have a hard and fast rule of how many I's versus U's. Yeah, Brian?
Yeah, I was going to say, we're getting questions. Is there a great, an optimum ratio? A few people have asked that.
Yeah, no, there's not. I know some people say there is. I don't want to get that directive. Mm-hmm. My rule is I want more you than I. So yeah. If there's two I's, there should be at least three U's, okay?
Wow. Jeff, I want to this is so amazing. I'm going to use this going forward. And this is a challenge I used to have, which I've been trying to correct in all my correspondence, but this is such a simple way to figure out if you're doing it right. But I have one more question. You might be getting to it, but the I's are in that first paragraph. Is there something to be said about starting with the U's rather than the I's? Or is it okay because there are enough U's in the first paragraph too? Or am I getting, and Jeff, someone's saying you missed a U at the bottom of the letter. I'm not sure where that is.
There are a few
U's. You did. Okay. Thank
so
you.
Eight.
In bold. You're right. It's even eight. Right. You missed it maybe because it was in bold, as she pointed out. Very funny. Yeah. So even a better ratio. But is it okay with the I's and the U's combined in the first paragraph?
Yeah, I guess I'm more interested in the ratio than the positioning. It's kind of hard to start without an I mm-hmm. in the starting sentence. It's kind of hard. It's not impossible by any means, but it's just a little bit more challenging. I typically find that the I's in the letters I write, they tend to be in the first paragraph because that's where you're sort of introducing, you know, starting the conversation. That again, so I don't have a rule about when and where. And really, you could say, well, just counting I's and U's, you could still get this wrong and have a great ratio. But it's going to be hard to get it wrong and easy to get it right if you have a good ratio. So thanks for catching my eighth U on this page. We have a 4-to-1 ratio here. That's really quite high. I don't often see it that high. I wish I did. I know that Tom Ahern, who I'm sure a lot of you know about, he says there should be a 3-to-1 ratio. Again, yes, the more the better is my rule, but my sort of basic rule is more you than I. And again, this is so easy to do. It's kind of a thing to do maybe sort of later in the process. And maybe what you'd want to do is say, hey, this year we're going to do a version of, you know, the annual fund appeal. It's going to be kind of like last year, but we're going to try to make it better. This is the first thing you should do in that process is go back to last year's, do the pronoun count, and then say, hey, we got a great ratio, so we don't need to fix it that much. Or as we tend to find most of the time when I see people who don't know this little secret, they tend to have a lot more I, we, us than you. And by the way, you could argue that the donor's name is also a form of you. So this, we could actually say, hey, there's the donor's name is a couple of times on this sheet too. So we could actually add two more. I did for the sake of this exercise, I don't do that. But sometimes I will consider that too. We don't have it. The name isn't scattered into the copy itself in this case. So this will make you a much better writer. But before we move on, I'd actually like to launch a little poll asking all of you this question. Okay. Now, this is private. You can answer honestly and nobody's going to know. So please give us the truth about this and look deep within your soul and into your fundraising copy and answer the question. Well, I'm just kind of interested to see how you think you're doing on this.
Okay. Jeff,
nobody will know.
Yeah, no will know. And while people are typing in, can I ask you, you do a lot of work with direct mail and such where the person writing the letter might be known to the recipient, but isn't necessarily a good friend. Do you find the ratios change if, as a board member, you're writing to one person you know well, trying to get a meeting or trying to get their attention?
If you're like writing an actually personal letter where, yeah, a board member talking to a potential donor, there actually might be a little more I because it gets a little more like a real conversation.
Right.
I'd still say, hey, even then, really make sure you're not overdoing it and try to have more you than I.
Great, thanks. So here are our results. Do you see them on your screen, Jeff?
I see them, but I have 0% for all the categories.
Okay, I don't know what that's wonky for you, so let me read them out. I think everyone else can see them. If you can't, let me know. We've got 22% a lot more than you, 47% okay, but could be better, 22% half and half, 8% not so great, 1% saying is you an actual word in the dictionary. Very appreciative of the 1% willing to say that. Yeah. And we got some people typing in as well, a variety of things. And I do have another question whenever you want to take it from someone. But
okay. Well, again, thanks for answering this. I know it's a little hard to answer. And I'm very impressed actually that the majority of you are in those better categories.
Yes.
And really okay, but could be actually might be the right answer for pretty much all of us, because you know what? There might be a way to get even better than, you know, that 8-to-2 ratio we saw in that previous. It's possible it could be better, even better than that. So like always strive for that. And maybe it's not so much in the count of the pronouns, but it might be in the what you're talking about. But really, the pronouns will lead you to say the right stuff.
Okay. So here's an interesting question related to that. I think it's the right time to think, and I'm going to hide the poll. But Lynn said that their annual fund letter is from someone who has used the services, a client or participant, and it's and it's a testimony from them. So it says a lot of I and we about how that person was impacted. Thoughts on that?
Yeah, and that's a good thing to do, you know, assuming that they have got a great story to tell. And I would just say probably in that case, you'll have a higher I level of I and we than you would otherwise, but really, really try to get like one more I than you, even in that case. It's going to be more of a struggle for you just because, like you say, the way the story is, it is about I and me and myself. So, yeah, still try. Get as high a ratio as you can, given that.
Excellent.
All right. Well, let me give you one other hack that'll actually help with this. And this is more of a first draft hack. And it's this. It's go you crazy in that first draft. And well, here's what I mean by that. Put you in every sentence in your first draft. Now, here you see, I had to sort of backform this from that letter we were just looking at, but I thought, I wonder what the first draft would have looked like if we had the word you in every sentence throughout the entire thing. And as you know, what you'll see here is, because that letter was sort of well-constructed, it wasn't too hard to do that. But you'll see some of the sentences are a little bit awkward. And that's what I get. So again, first draft, get you in every sentence, but and then later on, fix it so it doesn't sound weird. Because, yeah, you'll see that, as you can imagine, you might be sad. Some of those, you don't really need that. But by putting it in the first draft, you focus the sentence in the right place, and you end up focusing the whole message in the right way. So I very often do that. Again, fix it later, because you don't want to get these sort of wordy awkwardnesses that your first draft has. It's great to have a bad first draft. In fact, if you don't have a bad first draft, you're probably not going to have a good final draft. Okay, so try that. This is a little more difficult, but it will save you time later. It'll kind of get you off that, oh, we got to talk about ourselves. Now, I think a lot of you, and we might want to bring this up in the questioning at the end, this is the challenge, is you have other people at your organization who think we have to brag about ourselves and who are going to try to turn your beautiful, donor-focused, full-of-use copy into braggy, boring, flabby, we-focused, aren't we awesome copy, okay? That is actually, you know, you can overcome this challenge in yourself, but you still have to overcome the challenge at the organization and a lot of times.
Jeff, I've got another related question there. I'm going to, if it's okay, I'll keep popping them out because while you're on the IU, and it's the question about how often to use the prospect's name rather than you. And does that, you know, in a form letter like this, how does that work? How does that feel for donors?
I try to use it, some, but sparingly. Use it where it sounds natural, because really their name is kind of like you. In a way, it's almost like a super form of the word you. The only downside to avoid is sounding like a form letter that's trying to get a merge field in a lot. Okay, so don't let it make you sound that way. But yeah, if you're doing a personalized letter, you know, as we mostly are, most of the time, get their name in there now and then. I don't really have a rule for that. I don't, like I'd say, in a letter, you know, a 2 to 6 page letter, get in there at least once or twice, maybe more, and you know, read it aloud. Make sure it sounds okay and it doesn't sound like, you know, that, you know what I'm talking about, that sort of robotic, you're just using my name because you can sort of sound. You don't want to avoid that because that doesn't sound like a real conversation.
Right. Great, thanks.
Okay, now here's the thing I want you to remember, and this is just, again, why I'm so focused on this word you, is because they aren't giving to fund your programs. They're giving to change the world, okay? What does that mean? I know you think, and the way it looks from our point of view is we need donors to help fund our programs. Okay, that's true, but that's not their motivation. So again, here's that awkward conversation that kind of happens where we're saying, give us money so we can do cool stuff. And the donor is saying, can you help me do some cool stuff? And that kind of leads us to what I call fundraising by explaining. Here's some real fundraising that came into my inbox a while ago. Your gift will fund our fast action response team who will patrol the coastal waters for distressed dolphins. When they find a suffering animal, they'll gently assess its health and then formulate a rescue plan that meets its urgent needs, and they'll save its life. Okay, fine. That sounds like a description of, again, I'm not an expert in dolphin biology, but that sounds like a good thing to me. But that's not what's going to get people to give. All you're doing is explaining how your program works. Here's how you turn it into fundraising. Look how simple that is. Your gift will help save dolphins from painful and lonely deaths. Not how our program works, but what is the donor paying for? What does the donor want to happen? If you're talking to the right group of people who have a heart and a passion for dolphins, this is what they need to hear, is what is going to happen, not how you do it. Now, how you do it might be kind of sprinkled in and moderately discussed, but it's not the point. It's not what they're paying for. And you might tell a story, and the story might have details in it that reveal some of that stuff, but that's not why they're giving. Okay. I'm going to hand this over to all of you. Okay, I'm going to give you a little assignment, and I want you to take something out of your fundraising. I'm sure you have something on the top of your head, and write a fundraising action statement, right? One sentence, maybe two at the most, that you could say to donors, like, here's what you can do. Save the dolphins from a lonely and painful death. And here's the crazy thing. I'm going to give you 60 seconds to do it. That's massively unreasonable, but I think you can do it. And I think once you do that, you'll have opened a door into amazing fundraising. Okay. 60 seconds starting right now.
And are we going to keep silent during that?
Yes, we have to keep silent so they can.
Okay. And then we'll read some of them out.
Yes. Yeah. Then you'll read some. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, that's about a minute right there.
Wow, that is a long time.
Long time for
silence on a webinar. Wow.
I know you're not supposed to do that, right? But I hope you have. I know. Again, 60 seconds. It's not reasonable, but I find that when I give people this really tight amount of time, it might spark a little bit of energy. So what do we have, Brian? We have some good ones.
We have a whole bunch of them. I'll read a few of them out, and you can comment. You can help a student like Khadija get to and through college graduation. Do you want to comment as you take them?
Yeah, well, that is definitely an action statement. The challenge of that one is it's a very big action statement. That's not to say it's bad. It's just it's going to be maybe a little harder to work with in fundraising. But I have to say, nice job. That is exactly an action statement.
Okay. Your gift will help feed a homebound senior in need. From Tom.
Sounds good. Sounds to me like a Meals on Wheels.
Okay. Kim, your gift will change the trajectory of college students' lives.
That's a little abstract. Okay. I would say, can you sharpen that one up and make it more of a specific action?
Okay. Slightly more, would you have a recommendation, or you'd need more information to
I
do
would
that?
Yeah, I probably need more information. What is the what is happening? What is the difference? What's the specific difference you're going to make?
Got it. How about from Christy? You can help people and pets stay safely together and avoid them from entering the shelters by giving today.
That's good. I like that one a lot. I can imagine that actually being a very strong fundraising statement.
Okay. Your gift will help our people, property, and programs affect change through medicine, research, and intervention in our Chicagoland regional and global communities. Justin.
That's perilously close to a brag. Sorry, Justin. I'd say what you want to do with that is say, okay, but what is the donor going to do? And okay. It needs to be something more visible. I mean, this is like you've just described your entire mission. We need to say, okay, donor, what is the donor going to do? And let's focus on something.
Okay. I don't know what Justin's organization is, but if you're raising money for something very broad, like a hospital that does so many different things, or a research center, how do you deal with that if you're asking for a very general gift complex organization?
Yeah, and that's the challenge. Right. I assume, Justin, that's exactly the challenge you face. And hospitals are particularly challenging in that way because they just do a million little specific things. And that's why we tend to do that, is we tend to make these sort of broad statements. But you might say, well, what is the donor really here about? It's about making life better for the patients. It's about researching to overcome a disease. So find the particulars. You don't necessarily have to say you're going to pay for some little specific program, but you need to say something specific about what they will do.
You know, it's interesting as you say that, Jeff. I often have people do this this exercise. We call it features, benefits, impact. So first take the feature. You know, we have three wet labs. Well, what's the benefit of having them? Well, you know, we can run multiple experiments at once. Well, what's the impact that has? We cure things faster. We find cures, whatever. To keep asking that why question and going to a higher level, which is sort of what you're saying here, to talk, so that they understand the impact they're giving without getting too abstract, right?
Yeah.
Finding that balance of not being in the weeds, but not being too abstract. How about one more? I have one from Kelly. Your gift may be the decisive point of whether or not a student can afford their education at PLNU.
Yeah, I like that. I might see if you could sharpen it up a little bit, but you're really on the right track with that one. And actually, Brian, you just said that exercise, the feature benefit impact, that's a great thing to do. And I actually have my own version of that.
What is yours?
Mine is, and I think this is a Zen thing that I read somewhere. It's, if you want to know the truth about something, ask why 5 times. And that's really kind of what you just described, which is, okay, we want this, why?
Right.
And actually, you usually get to truth after 3.
Yeah,
you're right. But when you keep asking why with your sort of what does the donor care about hat on, you will get there.
I remember
it's not that hard.
Not that hard. I remember being in a workshop and I asked this question. I asked it of someone who said, we need $200,000. Why? To pay for our building. Why? Because we're carrying a lot of debt. Why? You know, when I said, well, what's the building? You know, why do you need this building? Because we're going to have art classes. Why do you need art classes? Because students and seniors need art classes. Why do students and seniors need art classes? I think we went through 10 of them, but I finally got her to the impact life art makes in life and in all the way, right? But sometimes it can take a number of iterations. I'm assuming you want to move on. We have 100 of these. Like, I mean, so many people have typed in. I don't know if you want to take one or two more because I don't know your timing. You tell me.
This is what I hope you'll do. Those of you who wrote these, copy them right now. So they'll be on your clipboard. And then after this is over, paste it on a document and then work on it. Add to it, make more versions of it, make it better. Because this is really kind of the exercise in fundraising is what's the action statement. And when you have an action statement, what makes it better? What makes it more exciting? What makes it more directly about what the donor wants? So I have to say, you know, some of you in this 60 seconds had a breakthrough. You may, you, and those of you who had Breakthrough, you may or may not know that yet. Okay, so that's why I say copy that, because when you sign off of this webinar, that piece of copy you just wrote is going to go away. So copy it real quick right now so you'll have it later to work with. Okay, so let me go on, because I have another hack. And that is to remove the middleman. And that's really just another way of doing what we're talking about here. So let me show you a couple of sort of common fundraising phrases that you might see. I've borrowed these from real fundraising. Your gift will help us save these vital wetlands. You can imagine, you've probably written things like that, where you get stuff like that in your inbox all the time. Help us rescue the children, support our outreach work in the schools. Okay, these are fundraising propositions. Here's how you take out the middleman, and it's so easy. Your gift will save these vital wetlands. Do you see what we did? We took one word out in this version. You now have a much better proposition. You're not saying, give us money so we can do something. You're saying, do something. Do this cool thing. Save these vital wetlands. Help us rescue the children becomes rescue the children. Support outreach work in school says reach out to kids in the schools. This is one of the just easiest ways to massively improve your fundraising. Is every time you have one of these statements and you see, whoops, we made it about ourselves. We said give so we can do it. Take that out. Make the donor the agent in this. Okay. Now here's the hard thing about this, because everything we know is wrong. And I don't mean like there's something wrong with us. It's just that we spend all our time and energy getting good at understanding what our organization does. And we must do that. Okay. I hope you have this in your organization. I hope you understand what it takes to be great and what it takes to get from great to even greater. And that you're always doing that stuff to make your organization more effective at what it does. But it doesn't take you to good fundraising. And that's why it's such a challenge. Now, this is what some people are thinking. Maybe none of you here in this webinar are thinking this, but there are people out there saying, no, everything I know isn't wrong. It's actually right. So I might say, almost everything you know is wrong. And here's why. Why do people donate? Because they give from the heart, not from the head. And knowing that kind of changes a lot for you. Think about it really just sort of purely robotically, rationally. Giving to charity is kind of a dumb thing to do. I mean, you have less money now and you got nothing back for it. Fortunately, your heart knows better. Your heart is wiser about this than your head is. You know you get a lot more back from giving than it costs you in money. And that's why we have to speak to the heart. And it's not about saying, here's how it works. Here are the statistics. Here's the numbers. That's not why they give. And that's why you need to make those sort of simple, easy, straightforward, and emotional points. And that's why telling a story is so effective. When you might say, well, the numbers, they're so big. Well, here's the thing. Donors don't give because the problem is big. They give because the problem is solvable. So think about that. Think about the difference between big and solvable. Those two things are almost opposites, aren't they? Solvable, it doesn't exactly mean small, but it almost always is small. So let me give you some examples. You've probably seen these. These, again, real statements I've seen in fundraising. 30,000 children die from hunger every day. This is actually apparently true. I can't verify it myself, but when you look at the world, 30,000 children die from hunger every day, every day. There's 5,000 homeless people in our city. That's a lot. Climate change is about to wipe out everything that you love. As far as I know, these things are true, but these are reasons not to give. And we've got to get away from talking about those things because they're not the point. These are reasons not to give. So what should we do instead? Well, I'll show you in hack number four, you want to describe small problems. So instead of 30,000 children die from hunger every day, a child is facing life-threatening hunger today. One child, Okay. And that's the key. When you, again, I have to point the finger at myself here. I spent years, and I worked for a lot of international poverty organizations. So the problem of world poverty, it's a massive problem. And this large number of children who die every day is a heartbreaking, and again, probably as far as I know, true fact. And I spent years trying to make that big fact seem even bigger. So I once spent an entire afternoon thinking, okay, how can I take that number, that 30,000 number, and put it into people's lives? So I looked up American cities with populations of 30,000. There are quite a few of them, and quite a few of them that you've heard of. They aren't just little podunk nothing towns. They're the cities you've heard of. I thought about stadiums. A lot of stadiums carry about that many people. So I did all this stuff, and I was doing exactly the wrong thing. I was trying to make big seem even bigger. The breakthrough was when I realized, when you say 30,000 every day and donors look at that, they'll go, so my gift, I could maybe save one or five or 10 or 100 kids. And that didn't even put a dent in that 30,000, and it's going to happen again tomorrow. Why should I give? In fact, we know from research that the top reason people who don't donate give is, why should I give? I can't make a difference. That's a lie. But we encourage belief in that lie by doing fundraising like this. So talking about one, making them see one, helps them understand, I can make a difference. And that's how we're going to solve this problem, by everybody doing what they can do. And by the way, we're making amazing progress against poverty. The level of life-threatening poverty has dropped like a rock in the last 20 to 30 years. It's so much better than it used to be. Now, it's far from where it should be. It's still a tragedy. It's still a massive problem. We still need to fix it, but it's working. We're changing this. So instead of 5,000 homeless people in our city, talk about one homeless vet who needs shelter tonight. Instead of climate change, and I think this climate change is one where they've kind of started to figure this out. For years and years and years, this was the message. Climate change is going to wipe us out. They're finally, the environmental organizations are finally getting some traction with Save a Polar Bear Today and things like that. Okay.
So, Jeff, a couple of questions that have come in. And interestingly, climate change is related to one of these questions, because I would argue that all of these challenges and problems are all of ours because we're one community. In fact, many times we're helping others, and sometimes what we're giving to helps ourselves. So, and someone, BC earlier said, you know, how does the word our fit into this? They use you a lot, but they also use our because they're referring to natural resources. Mm-hmm. And it's you and me together, right, saving our resources. So what, can you comment on that?
Yeah. That's kind of interesting, because I do run into this sometimes where people are using we and our in a way that means me, the writer, and you, the reader. And in a way that doesn't count as an I in that count you're doing. Technically, grammatically it does, but it's different. And if it's really, really clear when you say we and ours and our, that it's not the organization, but it's you and me, then it's almost like it counts as a you. Okay, that's a really complex thing, and it makes it kind of hard to diagnose. But if you are doing it and using it that way, and it's 100% obvious to the reader, then I say, go ahead, do it, because it is us together.
Great. And one more question that's actually on it. It's related to environment. I don't know if you know enough about Charity Water and their fundraising. Yeah. James asks, you know, they've created this movement, and it's all about solving the world's dirty water crisis. But are they taking the Save a Polar Bear Today approach now, as opposed to this grand, you know, we're in dire straits approach?
Yeah. Well, yes, they are. I mean, they are starting from the point that there's a big water problem, which there is. It's massive. It's all over the world. But when they get down to fundraising, they're always asking you to help dig a well. And they're so focused on that you can actually get the Google Earth coordinates and look at from space. You can look at your well. So they're actually doing a great job of not saying, solve this entire crisis, they're saying, hey, dig a well. You can do that. It's important. It matters a lot. And it matters so much that I want you to be able to see the well that you made possible. And I think what it blows me away how great that is. Now it'd be sort of cooler if you could actually open up Google and actually see the well. I mean, you can't. I've done this. You can't see it, but you see something. And that's where it is, that little sort of greenish spot down there. That's where my well is. So I think they're doing a great job. They have kind of in the background, the water crisis is a big problem, but that's not what they're fundraising about. They're fundraising about digging a well or whatever the project is they're working on.
One more question on this front, and that is, I mean, a lot of this is in particular for direct mail, crowdfunding, this broad electronic fundraising. And I'm going to make a leap here and say where there are many gifts, they tend to be smaller than a lot of the face-to-face work. We talk about Asking Matters. And Emily actually points out, you know, when you break down your fundraising needs to one person, how do you relate that to the bigger asks? And what does the data show, I guess would be my question, in terms of, you know, talking about one child and the size of the gift relative to talking about 30,000. I understand you're saying it's that someone's more enticed to give, but are gifts bigger when someone talks about 30,000 rather than one in this milieu?
No. But here's a way to think about that. Now, you're going to do better in those face-to-face, you know, we're talking to somebody who can give you $500,000, okay? You don't really want to say, you know, it costs $1.79 to feed one child. So your gift of $500,000 is going to feed, what is that, 300,000 children. Right. That's not exactly how you want to get to it. But you do want to talk about one child and say,
and then put in context.
Ms. Big, you know, $500,000 donor, your $500,000 will do this, and you tell them what it's going to do, and it will feed this really large number of children. But you get to their heart with the story of one.
Right.
Yes.
Right. Right. Great. Thanks.
Okay. So just a few things also sort of worth knowing, kind of getting back to, remember, people give with their heart and not with their head. I just want to sort of throw some things out at you about that. That's just going to help you do better fundraising. One is, the simpler the message, the more donations you'll get. And you've kind of seen this in the examples I've shown. It's like when you sort of stop talking about your programs and start talking about donor impact, it automatically gets simpler. And that's, again, this is one of the things I ask myself is this simple enough or have I made it complicated? So simpler is virtually always going to result in more fundraising dollars come in. Stories persuade, numbers numb. Again, we've been sort of talking about that in the bigger sense. Don't use numbers to persuade people. In fact, there's quite a bit of research that basically says if you tell a great story and then add the numbers. So in other words, if we told a really great story of one child who's going hungry and then say, and by the way, 30,000 children are going to die today, you actually just wrecked that story. So it's like, stay away from the numbers. People know the numbers. You don't need to tell them that. In fact, the numbers are what's making them hesitant to give. So just don't go there. Just resist the temptation to do that. Ugly works. And this is another thing. This is really hard, is that we spend so much energy and money making our fundraising look beautiful. That's usually the wrong thing to do. And I don't want to actually say ugly is not quite the right word for it, because it's not ugly. It's just, it tends to be not beautiful. Okay. So go for the plain, the simple, the old fashioned. Remember, donors are generally older than us. So what looks cool to them looks outdated to us. Okay. So when you embrace ugly works, don't think, well, I'm not trying to be ugly. I'm just not trying to be beautiful. Longer messages work better. I include this because it freaks people out. This is like, of all the things I say, this is one of the most controversial. People argue against me this the most. And yet it's one of the most sort of provably true things about fundraising. Longer messages virtually always, not always, but virtually always work better. And that's email, direct mail, anything. Web pages, it's like crazy long messages work really well. We don't really know why, but we know it's true. So you got, if you are struggling to get your fundraising letter down to one page, you are wasting your time and you are driving down your results. I can almost guarantee you that. I've done a lot of testing on this. I'd say about 10% of the time, a shorter message works better than a longer one. And it's like really specific situations where that happens. And you can, so, if you want to ask, yeah.
So Jeff, how does, Rezwan is asking this, how does the simpler message queue up with the longer letter, right? I mean, so you need to keep it simple but long, and how does that work?
Simple being you're not saying a lot of different things. Basically what happens in a long message is there's a lot of repetition, and you tell a story. You might tell more than one story. You ask about every third or fourth paragraph. That's what makes your letter long, not by adding more and more and more stuff to it. You still have to have a simple message.
Great, thanks.
Okay, and sort of the final thing, attention is harder to get than money. And this is a really important thing. I actually learned this a few years ago from a major donor expert who said in a meeting that I was in, it's harder to get the meeting than to get the donation. And I thought, wow, that's actually a truth across fundraising. It's actually a truth in life in general. It's harder to get someone's attention than to get their money. And so we should spend a fair amount of our energy saying, well, what are we going to do to break through? Because people, we're overwhelmed with commercial and other messages. And our fundraising is just knocking at the door, along with basic, I think Americans get, last I heard, and it's probably more now, 1,600 marketing messages every day. And your thing, your email or your letter or whatever it is one of those things. Wow, what chance do you have of getting their attention? Well, if you try to get their attention, at least you'll be in the right place. So kind of keeping this in mind.
Wow.
Yeah, right. And this Americans would probably have about as bad as it can be. And, you know, we get more information in a day than a medieval peasant got in his entire life. You know,
that's
the world we live in, is attention is the premium. It's more precious than money. And you can probably see this in your own life. You will spend money or waste money to clear headspace. We do it all the time. And our donors are in exactly that place. Okay. Here's the last hack. And I sort of hesitate to call it a hack because this one isn't easy. But if your fundraising is not making you uncomfortable, you're probably not doing a really good job. It has to be. You know, let me give you the consultant's dirty little secret, and that is this. If your client loves what you just did, you screwed it up. Okay? Every consultant I know says, yeah, that's true. Now, it's really awkward as a consultant. It's like one of the worst things that can happen is the client saying, I just absolutely love what you did. Because what it says is, you hit the wrong target. Good job hitting a target. And what do you do? Well, do you want to say, oh, you like it? Okay, let me change it. It's very, very awkward. And you know, it's one of the consultant's conundrums. But what that tells us is, you can't aim at yourself. And you can't aim at your colleagues and your boss and your board. That's the wrong people to aim at. So it's got to make you a little uncomfortable. And if you're going to go, oh, I'm not sure about this, that's a sign that you're on the right track. Okay. Okay. Again, it's not really a hack. It's not actually easy to do. It's actually very difficult to do this. But keep that in mind. Fundraising is not about you feeling good about it. It's not about your boss feeling good about it. It's about connecting with donors. And that's how you'll get there. Oh, okay. So that's about it. And we have only 5 minutes. Let's open it up for questions.
Yes, great. So I'm going to take back the screen. And before we do have more questions, we're going to share them. Hold on one sec. Show my screen. And I want to say just two things before we go on, and many of you know this. One, Hayard Asking Matters. We're in the middle of our membership drive. We only open membership two or three times a year. We haven't since October. You're probably all hearing about it because you're on our list. And two, I want to be a shill for Jeff and say everyone should get his book, The Fundraiser's Guide to Irresistible Communications, which you can get on Amazon and elsewhere. It's a great book and will help you a lot. And now let's take a couple of questions. So we'll take at least two more. Here's an interesting one, which I think a lot of smaller organizations would like to hear about. Anne asked, you know, if donors give to the small problems, Terry, what if we are a smaller organization and we want to make sure donors know we're helping a lot, in this case, over 2,300 patients, right? Because some small institutions feel they struggle because people think small institution, small gift, right? Small impact, small gift. So talking about one, when you're small, could that make them even smaller and such? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, well, that's a really good question. And my answer to this is fundraising isn't just about asking. And we've been talking about asking here. The place for you to go back and say, guess what? You had big impact is after they have given. So when you ask, you got to talk about the small problem, the problem they can solve. But then when you thank them, and then what later on with your newsletter and other ways you know, the stewardship activities that you do, that's where you then say, and guess what? You may not have realized it, but you and other people like you helped, you know, 2,300 people. We had this many patients. We fed this many children. We saved this many puppies. And at that point, you do start talking about big, because that's where they go, you surprise them with, and did you know what a big difference you helped make? So it is, there is a time when you talk about big impact.
Great, great. Thank you. And here's one from Maura, who's in higher ed, and said, and is intimating that in higher ed, some of this is different. And I guess when you're talking to your fellow alums and such, what, and there are a lot of people in higher ed on today, I'm sure, and in our field, any thoughts for them relative to what we've been talking about today?
Yeah, it's true that higher ed is different in some key ways. In fact, in arts is kind of in this category too. Mm-hmm. The main reason people give to higher ed, it has a lot more to do with themselves than with helping other people. And I'm sort of making that sound like they're bad. Yeah, that's not really it. But you know, you give to your alumni association, it's partly to help those struggling students who will get scholarships, but it's actually to improve your resume, either kind of literally or symbolically. It's like you give to your alma mater to increase the glory of your alma mater, which increases the glory of you.
So there's some self-reflection in that gift. Yes.
That's right. In fact, that's the primary reason they give. You don't want to ignore sort of the good they do. But you can't ignore also the fact that they're giving for themselves. And this is the same with the arts. They give to an arts organization because they want the art to exist so they can consume it. Okay. Reach out to the kids and change the life of people through your art form. Fine. But that's not the main reason they give. They give so the art form will be there for them. So you do need to keep those things in mind. And it does change a little bit, and in some ways a big bit, how you do your fundraising.
Excellent. Thank you. Well, we have many more questions, but we are at the top of the hour. It's about to turn to 2:00 Eastern time, and you have been amazing. I have written an entire page of notes here. I bet other people have. I love the quote, ugly works, which really is just about, you know, keeping it simple and not feeling things have to be so fancy, reminding us all that we have to get to the heart of the story, putting you in everything, removing the middleman. That whole idea of 1,600 marketing messages a day is daunting. How do you break through that? And this make yourself uncomfortable. There's just so much great stuff here. Thank you so much, Jeff, for joining us today. Thank you, everyone, for joining us. And thank you, everyone, for being out there fundraising, which is not always fun, not always easy, but without our fundraising, nothing happens. None of the amazing work, none of the important work around the world can happen. So thank you all very much. Have a great afternoon. Jeff, thank you again for joining us.
Thank you. It's been great to be here.
Take care, everyone.